streets was filled with love. I used to go outside and play with the boys and girls. You can't do that now. Haven't you heard? The street that used to be filled with love. All you hear by now is blood. Oh, Lord. We didn't have to worry about anybody doing no harm. All we worried about is where our next meal was coming from. It ain't like that now. Haven't you heard? Oh, no. Why do you?
Bobby Blue Bland, as he was yesterday, with Sad Street. It's a title track of his 1995 album, and there's a reason that we're repeating his observations in song, because we're going to be going back to our discussion, which we began yesterday, about this murderous weekend in Chicago. It is not for me, and it shouldn't be for us, just a news item. It should be something that causes us to pause and examine very carefully, to the best of our ability, what we think has happened here. We know that it is just unacceptable to have this bloodlust infect an entire city. And we know in the United States, it takes just one thing to happen, and we will in short time see replications of the same thing elsewhere. So I'm not just thinking in terms of what happened last weekend. I'm thinking of similar situations that will be occurring in the weekends ahead. What are we seeing? What is this that is happening? And why is it that we find all kinds of explanations? And that's what they are, they're explanations, and it's good to have an explanation. In theory, we can figure out what's going on, theoretically. But this is a thing that requires us to engage hands-on. This is reality. And therefore, we have to summon up the courage to take a look at it from that perspective. This is a real community with real people, many of whom are killing other people in an orgy of death. This is something the likes of which we have not seen ever in our communities. Yes, murders and horrendous violence do occur in our community. But this level is just unprecedented. And it means that the idea of self-annihilation, which the late Amos Wilson talked so much about and warned us about, is actually taking place before our very eyes. So today, I mean, yesterday we had a good thrashing out, I would say, of some of the overarching influences that we think contribute to this mindset of violence. But I want us to face very squarely the fact that at some point we have to get real. That much of what is going on in the community, the responsibility lies squarely with us. It may be convenient and it may be even politically correct, I guess, to look at the contributing factors, the role of the state, the role of law enforcement, the impact of other forces such as poverty, restriction of opportunity, all these things impact on crime and quality of life. We get that. But these people who were doing the killing in Chicago come out of houses and homes where people know what is happening and are doing nothing about it. A young man in your household has no job. He's not in school. He's not engaged in any kind of activity that would help him in his life in a meaningful way. Yet he comes home, he parks his brand new whatever car, he comes in your house, he eats whatever is ready to be eaten, or he brings in his food, he eats, he goes to sleep. You say nothing. How do you have a brand new car? You have no job. You have no visible means of support. These are the questions. We have had a lawlessness in our communities for a long time, aided and abetted by people who don't care what the consequences are to the community as a whole. They have sons and daughters of whom they are proud, but who, in the scheme of things, are utterly useless to the community and even to their own families because they are pursuing lifestyles that are negative, that are sure to end up having negative consequences. They say nothing. They do nothing. They enable. I'm sure that when you take a forensic look, a finite look at who is doing the wrong in our communities, it will be no surprise to their families. They know what these people are doing. As long as they do it to somebody else, they keep their mouths shut. They proceed as if this is normal. Young women, young men, off the rails early in life. There's nobody there that grabs them by the scruff of their necks and says, hey, there's another way to live. And if you are going or choosing to live this way, I can't accommodate you. I can't help you and assist you in this lifestyle. I will have to cut you off. But there has been a very high tolerance level for this kind of antisocial behavior. And it festers and it grows. And next thing you know, dozens of people in one fell swoop, just a tight segment of time, are dead. Their killers look just like them. And that's where we are. If this does not constitute a national crisis, I don't know what will. This is more than Trump and his shenanigans, more than the political craziness that we see going on. This is about survival of a people. And this isn't just a crime. This is part of the program of annihilation. We need to understand it that way. We need to take it that seriously. There are people among us aiding and abetting the program that has been designed for us, which is annihilation. Nobody has to come into your community to kill you. Nobody has to drive your community down. You're doing a great job all by ourselves. And still we are living in the denial that there is some outside force that is causing people to act this way, mindlessly. And that we have no way of interceding. We have no way of calling it out. And we have no way of forestalling the inevitable. What is the role? How does a household function? And we need to start asking these questions and bring these so-called parents into account. How could you possibly raise somebody? I'm not suggesting here that parents are 100% responsible for their progeny. But I'm saying that insofar as we have seen generations of this kind of malady, it is reasonable to assume that the parents and leaders of our community have abrogated their role and responsibility. In Chicago, you have, let's take a theoretical look at it. Theoretically, you have a shot of making something of yourself, contributing to the advancement of your community. It's not at all perfect. But the answer is to strive, as your forebears did. The answer is to have a life's plan. The answer is to be forward thinking and uplifting. It is not living day by day, minute by minute, on the strength of your criminal skills. And the time certainly has come for a community to act like one. The people who are dragging this community down, they have to go. They have to go. This is no longer an issue where you kind and understanding. There's nothing kind and understanding about people being shot in the street. You have to make some kind of rules. Somebody has got to have some kind of rules, which is what a community is. A cooperative or a collection of people living by rules. You have your children out in the street past midnight. That is not a good rule. Your children are engaging in all kinds of illegal activity. You choose not to see it. So we now have to enter a phase in which we decide whether we want rules, whether we understand the concept of community, or whether we choose to live like marauders. Anything goes. And these are people who would swear to you that they understand the standing order, which is that there are people in our society who are not desirable. African Americans are one, indigenous people are one, Latinos are one. They're not desirable. Hillary Clinton, with her progressive self, had no problem using the word deplorables. We are deplorables. We always have been. And now you're going to bring it full circle where the violence directed at you, yourself, and your own community is now being directed by you and people like you. And you're holding entire communities hostage because you are above the law. You are above guidance. What is this? And how long are people prepared to tolerate this? This is crazy. So I'm saying, unless people start taking a stand now, it's way late now, but it's not too late. And retrieve this notion of community, which is the only thing that has kept us alive. When sacred precepts no longer matter, when people no longer matter to each other, it means there is no hope. You dare not talk about community. Your community is dead. And whether by silence or active encouragement or ignoring the problem, we are actually giving voice, helping people continue the unfinished fight of annihilation. They don't have to do anything anymore. We are doing a splendid job. We are overrepresented in the jails and prisons of this nation. We are overrepresented in terms of poverty and deprivation. When that wasn't, not even theoretically, that wasn't our mindset. Our mindset was always about achieving, building, creating, holding on together. And we have these marauders in our neighborhoods and in our communities doing everything they can, because it feeds the ego to know that they are bosses, crime bosses. And as I said, they are coming out of households in our community. They're not strangers from out of town. So if we don't get it now, we won't get it ever. If we don't understand that we have an assignment, each one of us has an assignment to make this the centerpiece of our discussions and our actions, our collective actions, we might as well hang it up. I'll take this break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. I'm asking us today, let's not get theoretical today. Let's get practical and real about where we are and what this murderous weekend has finally made a statement about our collective condition. Right after this.
Every town, you'll find a sad street. Just look around you, and you'll find sad street. Oh, sad street. Oh, Lord, haven't you heard? No. Seems like that's where all the trouble be. Down on Sad Street.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and an agitated Eutrice Lead. Because I find that we are still looking elsewhere for causes of a problem whose genesis we know. And we have spent many, many years excusing the inexcusable. We're talking in a theoretical sense about what contributed to this or what might have contributed to this, and that's good. But we have had so many opportunities to understand the nature of this kind of crime. This goes beyond black-on-black crime. This is the crime of annihilation, and we need to understand it in that sense. It is that severe. We don't need to retrace a lot of the historical facts. We know that. I'm saying, what are we doing to solve this? Because it surely will multiply. We will surely see other examples. This is the nature of things. Jeff from New Jersey, sorry. You're on the air.
greetings. Yes, I am a little hoarse. So, anyway, I look at what happened in Los Angeles. The Bloods and Crips decided that they were going to have a peace treaty, and they did. And then all of a sudden, some guys in red shot some guys in blue. Nobody knows who they were. But the whole thing is, if you can divide, you can conquer. The solution to that will be your bosses, the higher-ups, talking to each other. Someone needs to explain to them, you don't shit in your own neighborhood, or don't shit where you eat. They want to be gangsters, do it in the true sense. Have your neighborhoods locked down, have them beautiful, and you do your business, whatever you do, and you don't bring it to the people in your neighborhood. All right? The other thing is, I think that there's something to be said about the outside influences, along with the lines of pollution. Everyone in Chicago should be wearing a mask. Go to Home Depot, get you the paper mask, you put it on. Anytime you go outside, you put it on. I remember with Baltimore, everyone in Baltimore was galvanized against the police after Freddie Gray. And then that following week, they had the highest murder rate that they'd ever had. And I'm thinking, how does this happen? How do everyone against the police, even the gang members, stop people from looting stores? The gang members served as intermediaries. So who was shooting who? You have to, this is why the bosses, these guys, and I'm just talking on a practical sense. I'm not saying they should be around or not. But if they're going to be there, then you need to call this a truce. Because all your soldiers are done. And when your soldiers are done, who's there to protect you? And if you kill everyone,
the thing is just the same. I resent the idea that I have to live in a way in which I have to consider whether my own life is an offense to some faceless, nameless, so-called leader. The fact is, we have to expose and we have to deal with the truth that much of what is considered daily life in our communities is anathema to us. We don't want it. We don't like it. But these people are from us. So what do you do?
Well, I'm saying here, that the people in the community can stand up and do what they have to do. But we have to understand that the outside influence, even if we, just like I cited in Los Angeles, even if there's a truce called, you have to be wary of people disguising themselves and then going and doing something to another group of people and then rekindling that war. Even if the gang members in Chicago say, you know what, we're going to have peace, there will be no peace because there will be agitators from the outside.
It comes down to the simple thing of, are you running your household or not? How could you have a teenager walking in your house and you know he is into dirty stuff? You know he's doing wrong. But he's my son. What should you care that he's your? He's not acting like your son.
No, well,
like a leech. He's acting like a person who doesn't understand who is the boss of this household. And people in the household who say they are heads of households are putting up with this garbage and forcing other people to live with it.
And one of the reasons,
let's say somebody has a wayward son, and you cannot handle your wayward son or daughter. How is it now my responsibility to live with the fact that you can't do your job? You're not doing your job of instilling some kind of order and discipline in your household.
I agree.
That's a question.
I agree.
That's a question. We have all kinds of ways of explaining how and why people are likely to go down this path. I'm at the first square block, which is what's happening in your household? How could you be raising these kinds of children and inflicting them on the rest of the community? It's a question.
Yeah, I believe that.
Thank you for your call. From Michigan, Leonia, you're on the air.
Greetings, Yatrice.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me? Okay, good. Listen,
yes.
I want to thank you for bringing this angle to this discussion. Because, as you say, it's time to, well, I don't know if you said it or not, but get down to the nitty-gritty and, quote-unquote, keep it real. Now, one of the things I have started doing in my own life, day-to-day, is before I contact anyone, before I make a phone call, before I go someplace, I ask myself the question, is this contact going to result in it going to bring some constructive results? I think I've said before, I try to study the work of Neely Fuller Jr. And I don't want to quote him or misquote him or anything like that. But some of the things in his book, that code of behavior, that code for counter-racist code, some of that stuff I have found works in my life. It cuts down the BS when I ask that question. Now, I'm not going to contact the person unless I think I'm clear on what the constructive results are going to be. There are four questions. One, what do I want to do? Two, why do I want to do it? Three, how do I plan to do it? And four, what do I expect the constructive results to be? That has stopped me from making a lot of phone calls or talking to a lot of different people. Now, I like what you said about us having to bear the responsibility of somebody else's failure to raise their offspring or what have you. And that's not fair. That's not just. And, yeah, if you happen to know, oh, here's the other thing I wanted to say. I don't want to get off on a tangent. These killings, now this is my understanding of what Neely Fuller said, too. These killings, if you got the balls or the ovaries to kill somebody, then you shouldn't be hiding nowhere. You should come out up front and say, yes, I did it. If you going to take somebody else's life, then stand up and don't hide. And nobody need to be hiding you either. Take the consequences of your actions. You got no right to take nobody's life. But should you take it, how dare you hide? How dare you hide? I'm going to stop now. I'm getting emotional.
And how dare you expect that we will hide you? And
thank
protect you when you've done such evil and wrong.
Thank you.
These are the questions we need to start examining, and we need to understand the implications of our actions and inactions. Because look at what is happening. In one weekend, all these people being hurt and killed. And then they are all from the community. And we are wasting time, it seems to me, getting into the theory of violence when we are seeing the actual results of actual violence. And it has enjoyed a level of tolerance in our communities that we haven't seen in a long time, where we know people who are doing wrong. And it's no longer the kind of wrong, like, you know, somebody's running numbers or somebody's selling bogus off-label products. This is actually taking life.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
We need to have a national... This is worthy of a national urgent call, because it is symbolizing that we are in serious trouble, because there are many more Chicagos. We just don't hear about them in the news that often.
Yes,
but
ma'am.
Think about that.
I'm sorry, repeat that last thing. What you said?
I said, so we should be thinking about that.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I agree. And I'm also reminded of the late Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And one of her sayings is that she feels that self-respect is more powerful than a nuclear weapon. Self-respect. And she had like 17 admonitions, a behavior code for self-respect and group self-respect and mental health. You know, she was a psychiatrist, child and general psychiatrist. And she held the record for being the only psychiatrist to talk about the impact of racism, white supremacy, and try to reverse that in her practice. 40 years. That says something that I wonder why these other psychiatrists aren't talking about that. But of her 17, I don't want to go all in them, but, you know, she says, you know, I would not call anyone out of his or her name. I would not gossip about anybody. I would not squabble with anyone. I will not snitch on anyone for personal gain. I will not curse anyone, be discourteous to anyone, be disrespectful to anyone. I have not stolen from anyone, not robbed anyone, fought anyone, killed anyone, not trashed my home or community or workplace, not used or sold drugs, not encouraged black children to think they can be adequate mothers and fathers at a young age, not encouraged others to believe that welfare will save them, and have encouraged them to believe in prosperity. Have not pretended that racism, white supremacy does not exist, have not allowed any black, brown, red, or yellow person to be divided or conquered by the perpetrators of white supremacy.
Well, we have a long way to go.
Yes, ma'am.
We have a long way to go. Thank you so much for your call today, Leona.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
from
you.
The Bronx. From the Bronx, Daryl, you're on the air.
Daryl McPherson from the Bronx. Really glad to hear you again, Ms. Lead. Don't often get a chance to get on the internet to hear you. Old WBAI listener, and appreciated your talkback show when you were in New York.
Thank you.
With regard to the issue, I appreciate the indignation, but what's the answer? May I proffer some answers to the question, because you keep using the word community as if the people who are perpetrating the crime consider themselves as part of the group that you're referring to.
All right. I'm saying the word community in the sense that we typically understand it, that we share certain things in common that over a span of time have been very, very important in pulling us together rather than driving us apart. We share a common ancestry. We share a common language. We share sometimes a common geography. We share common bloodline sometimes. There's so many ways in which we really are a community if we take the time to see how much we have in common as opposed to how much drives us apart.
All right, so taking what you said, the people that we're talking about in Chicago live in a given area, correct?
We're going to give...
That is one thing they have in common. They live in a given area.
Yeah, they live in a given area. They live
right.
Among us.
I would suggest
they
that.
Live in
all
they
the other
share our geographic
about?
Area.
Right, but I would suggest that all the other things you spoke about, they don't share. I would suggest that they have a different meaning, if not a totally different language. They have a different mindset. The people who commit crimes, to my understanding, from just a psychological point of view, have a problem with love. Either they've never been loved or they don't know how to love. They have no reflection on what it means to be responsible to other individuals in the kind of context that you're referring to. And
well,
the easiest and fastest
way... It's a matter that people interpret things differently. We have to allow for that. We don't see eye to eye on everything. No community does. No community is 100% in line with the idea that we have to have everything in common. That's not what it is. We are selective about the things that we believe to be most important, that we see eye to eye on, and then we work on the rest. No community has 100% solidarity at all.
I totally agree. What I'm looking for in the answer is that how do you take a person who has very little, if no, understanding of what it means to be loved and get them to invest in taking the chance to be open enough to be part of a community? What the people who I've met who've committed crimes, the people in my family who, for whatever reason, had an experience which alienated them from the rest of the family, and then for their own reasons sought relief in first probably substance abuse and then in crime. That is one way that I know. The way that we brought them back was to show them with a different model that they could get a whole lot more by changing their behavior than pursuing the ends that they were pursuing. And it was not easy. However, there are very few babies who come out wanting to be gangbangers. There's a process. There's either a lack of parenting, there's a lack of community to support the parenting. All of that, I would suggest, is much more fruitful than continually being outraged by the outrage. The taking of life is relatively serious in the natural. However, those people who are taking the life are already dead. They're just walking around. What we need to do is enliven them first. Then you can have the discussion. The older way was you arrest, you punish in some way, beat, torture, and then you execute, preferably disembowel, as an example. Ain't never been a very good example. And the prison system that we have right now is only producing better criminals. Many of us agree to that.
You're off on a different tangent. I am saying that we should assume, or we could assume, that if you're running a household, you have a discipline that you enforce. You do not allow your children to be in the street past midnight. That is not one of the things that anybody would consider to be a crime, to be out in the street. But you know what? It is part of the discipline of the household. The consciousness of the household is you can't be involved in very much that is to your advantage when you're out in the street past midnight. I'm not going to allow my children to be out in the street. Plain and simple. Now, it may not be a popular choice, it may not be a popular opinion, but I'm not caring about that. I'm caring about the fact that I'm a head of a household. However people choose to regard it or disregard it, that's up to them. But if you're living under my roof, and I know I sound like 1940s America, if you're living under my roof, you're abiding by my rules, plain and simple. You can't abide by my rules, I am positive you will be abiding by somebody else's rules.
And that's what's happening. If that is in fact the case, that A, you even have the people who are perpetrating these acts have that kind of caring home in which there is a providing parent who has a set of rules that they keep and exhibit and then expect the child to keep. And I'm contesting that the people who are committing these crimes, yes, they may go home to a, they may go to a place that they are residing, but it is not a home, and that they have been fending for themselves, creating their own, for all practical purposes, law for some time. It takes a lot to shoot someone, especially if you're young, and the way that you develop the psyche to be able to take that life is to not have very much regard for your own life. And,
well,
and that doesn't come from the home that you're talking about.
There has to be an orientation. There has to be an orientation within whatever family system that you have. I understand how difficult it is for many people to maintain some kind of discipline. But here's the thought. After these people did all that shooting, they went home.
What I'm saying is, they went to a place.
That's all right.
I'm not saying that there was a home there. I'm not saying that there was any structure that you would suggest is meant to benefit the child. I would suggest that the people who are perpetrating those crimes do not have that. And that our job as quote-unquote community is to seek out and provide that, no matter how heinous the previous behavior of the person is. I sort of laugh. This may sound like a scatter, but look at MS-13.
I'm saying that we must stop coddling these folks. They are a pariah. They are a negative presence among us because they insist on being a negative presence. They insist that crime is the way. They insist on adopting and following all these things that are aberrant or used to be aberrant to us. And yet they are among us, and they are among us to the extent now that they are ruling us, whether by fear or by sheer force. We've crossed a threshold here, and we can't believe that it's like the old times. No. This is a problem that requires very serious intervention. And we have to draw lines. We've got to let people know. We are prepared. We love you. We raised you and all of that. But we are not going to countenance your behavior. Not only is it wrong and immoral, but it's just not going to be of benefit to you, let alone to the community. We have to separate ourselves from you or separate you from ourselves. But we cannot continue this practice of, well, pretending these things are not happening. You're not a thief. You're not a murderer. You're my son. Heck no. You have become something else. And until we find a way for you to return to some level of consciousness where we can embrace you, it's not our job to be always the forgiving party, no matter how badly you have behaved. At some point, we're going to say, and we should say, well, I can't help you beyond this point. But I must, for the sake of my household, for the sake of my other children, for the sake of my community, I've got to move on. You have no desire to change. And these things that you're doing are so profoundly aberrant. We cannot countenance them on any level. Social work stuff, social work theory is good. But this situation involves taking people's lives, involves your assumption, your arrogant assumption that you can do no wrong, that no matter what you do, you have a soft place to fall. No. No. We've got to get real with what is happening in our communities. Gabby from Chicago, you're on the air. Oh, you're not there anymore. Okay. This is what I'm talking about. We have reached this point of reckoning. We have to indicate for ourselves We have standards. We were raised with them. This is one of the things that used to be of such great comfort to me personally, traveling just about anywhere. When I reach a black neighborhood, I feel okay. I feel okay. I know there's drugs and I know that, you know, lots of things that are very unpleasant are happening. But I still feel a sense of comfort about people still holding on. They still hold to these old and tried and true traditions. But we have elements within our communities, and we've got to admit it. We've got to face them down. They are of no use or of very little use to our aggregate concerns and our ways of life. They have chosen to be agents of annihilation. We can't look upon these people as our friends, as even if they are our children. We have to accept that they have gone beyond a point where mere mortals like us can deal with that. Still, we have to carry on. And we have to let them know that whether they choose to recognize it or not, we do have rules. We do have a historical memory. We do have standards. Your decision to pursue a criminal career, that's your decision. There are consequences attendant to that. If that's what you choose, that's what you choose. But you cannot choose to put the whole community on the line because you made a certain choice. That is antithetical to everything we stand for. We have to encourage parents to be parents. So you're a single parent, so what? Does that mean you have no control at all over your household? That the activities of your children do not concern you? So that you don't see the connection between your children's being out of control having an impact on somebody who may lose their lives because your child decided, your precious child decided to kill them. We are at that point nationally for sure. We are at that where we have to decide what for us are to be our standards and what for us are to be the reactions, the absolute guaranteed reactions. There are some communities when somebody does wrong, they expel them. And these are religious people. You do a wrong, we absolutely kick you out. We disown you because you have violated willfully the one thing that keeps us going, the one thing that keeps us together, which is a shared culture, a shared understanding of what we are about. We're not going to interfere with you and your lifestyle that you choose, but we damn sure are not going to allow you to destroy ours. You don't belong among us. You're not one of us. And we will make that point clear. That you will have to go. Where you go, that's up to you. We have to get serious, folks. This is not just an incident, and this is not a thing that made a lot of headlines This is the warning we have been dreading. Last weekend's murderous deeds are the warnings that we have been told about. When we lose control, when we give ourselves over to the very system that seeks to annihilate us, we have people cooperating wholeheartedly with that plan, not caring anymore that they are agents of a vile mission when they do these kinds of things, and we have to separate ourselves from them or separate them from ourselves. We have to call them out. And we can't hide behind theories, and we can't hide behind sociological and psychological explanations that has nothing really to do with the fact that on a given night, young men decided to engage in activities that proved to be lethal to our community, with the expectation that they deserve no punishment at all. This is crazy. And worse, it is a prophecy that has come true. Let's think about that. Thanks for listening. And we will rejoin each other tomorrow with your thoughts about other things, perhaps, on Free Your Mind Friday. But thank you so much for listening and contributing so meaningfully. I so appreciate, because you're instructing me too. Thank you so much. It seems like that's where all the trouble be.